Shalom, welcome to Ask JTF, the program in which we attempt to answer questions from our great JTFers. I'm Chaim Ben Pesach from the Jewish Task Force. This program is dedicated to a refuah shlema, complete recovery, for Sharon Mitman, Shlomo Ben Sarah, and Dorit Bat Sarah, and to Ilui Neshamot, elevating of the souls, for Malka Bat Meir, Allegra Bat Shlomo, Daniel Nankin, Victor Hasdai, Pesach Seb Ben Dov, Lunita Adler, Shifra Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, Barry Hoffman, Harab Mir Kahana, Harab Benjamin Kahana, Tzipora Fegi Bat Liba, Yosef Ben Meir, Robert Mitman, Dennis Shore, Helen Friedman, and Charles Zolat. Well, for the third time in less than 3 weeks, the very important and beautiful hilltop community at Ramat Migron was destroyed by Israeli police under the orders of the so-called defense minister of Israel, Benny Gantz, Yimach Shmo v'Zichro. May his name and memory be obliterated, that self-hating beast who allows the Arabs to build thousands of illegal buildings and houses and structures all over Judea and Samaria in blatant violation of Israeli laws, in blatant violation of even of the disgusting Oslo agreements. Even under those agreements, they're not allowed to do what they're doing. They've taken over one-third of Area C, which was supposed to be completely under Israeli control in Judea and Samaria through illegal building. And he doesn't touch what they're doing. But literally, a half a mile away from their massive illegal building, there are three Jewish families that live on a hilltop in order to prevent them from being able to have a contiguous Palestinian state, in order to prevent them from being able to take over the whole area, which is what they would do if the hilltop heroes weren't there. And he orders the police not to go in and destroy the illegal Arab building. That he doesn't touch. He orders the police to go in and destroy the homes of these three beautiful Jewish families. Third time in less than 3 weeks. Don't worry, JTF is going to be there to help them rebuild. We're going to help finance their rebuilding. They also raise money. There are two sources they have. One source of their funding is that they raise money through what's called amutot, which are organizations that they have in Israel, not-for-profit organizations they put together in Israel to raise money. So they're going to be raising money from their supporters in Israel, and we're going to be helping them as well. And our help to them is very, very, very significant percentage of the support they get comes from JTF. I'm going to show you now a picture of some blood that was splattered from a 17-year-old Jewish girl who lived on that hilltop. And they beat her until her blood was splattered. And it's a picture of the blood. Now, we would have more pictures of this, but they seized their cameras, they seized their cell phones and stole their cameras and cell phones, the police. They steal everything because they don't want any evidence of what's going on. But we managed to get one picture of blood from a 17-year-old girl who lived and on this hilltop and still lives on the hilltop. She's going back despite what was done to her. Look at this. This is the blood that comes from the 17-year-old Jewish girl, this heroic Jewish girl, who has faced three violent pogroms in less than 3 weeks. The police knock her to the ground, punch her and kick her. And she goes back, and she's only 17 years old, and she goes back again and again because she wants to protect the land of Israel and loves the land of Israel and loves the Jewish people. What Jewish heroes. How could anyone out there who has the heart of a Jew and certainly the heart of a human being not want to fight for these people and not want to do everything we can to show that we support them? We, and I'm talking about the Jews now watching this program, we're all supposed to be on those hilltops together with them. And if we're not, at the very least, we're obligated to do everything we can to support them. And I want to say to the people who have means, the wealthy people watching this program, because there are wealthy people who receive these videos and who watch these videos. I'm talking about people with substantial means who can provide tremendous support and do fundraisers for us. And there are a number of very wealthy people that watch our videos every week. For you to allow this blood to be spilled and not do something, let me tell you something. You were given your wealth for a reason. And if you don't use it for this, you're certainly not doing what you're supposed to do, the reason you're in this world. You're not fulfilling what you're supposed to fulfill in this world. And I'm telling you that for certainty. That this is the cause that you should be supporting. That with a certainty. Because I know some of the people on our list who receive these videos. And some of the people who receive these videos give to all types of terrible causes. I know what I'm talking about. They're so heroic and noble. Look at them sacrificing everything because they love the land of Israel and they love the Jewish people. What a difference between this 17-year-old Jewish girl on this hilltop living without electricity and water and being beaten and knocked to the ground and facing violence and getting arrested because she lives in the land of Israel. It's against the law for Jews to live in the heartland of biblical Israel. Arabs can build illegally everywhere. But Jews are not allowed to live in their own homeland. This is the anti-Semitic policies of a so-called Jewish government. What a joke. And anyone who's silent in the face of this is an accessory to this crime. If you're silent and you don't do something about it, you're an accessory to the crime. All of us are obligated to do something about this. I'm going to give everybody here an opportunity to support the Heroic Hilltop Youth. There are two ways we can do that. And those two ways are through the internet. You can go to our Hebrew main page, which is how you help us on the internet. And on the Hebrew main page is hayamin.org. You go to hayamin.org. And on hayamin.org, there's a donate button in English. Of course, most of the page obviously is in Hebrew because it's the Hebrew main page. And we have Hebrew videos there. Almost the whole page is in Hebrew, but there is a big donate button that you'll see on top. There's a donate button in English. You just click on the donate button, and in several minutes, very easily and very conveniently, you can donate. And your donations on the internet are all tax exempt, are all tax deductible. If you want to support us through the regular mail, you can send your checks and money orders to JTF, P.O. Box 650327. Fresh Meadows, New York, 11365. JTF PO Box 650327, Fresh Meadows, New York, 11365. Now, if you wanted to be in the regular mail, there are two organizations that you can support. One is political, JTF, and one is tax-exempt, BJA. If you wanted to be tax-exempt, you make the check or money order out to VJA. VJA stands for Voice of Jewish Activism, and then your check or money order will be tax-deductible and tax-exempt, and you can write it off. Oh, how I wish I had the resources to give them everything. I plan to give them pretty much everything I have in this world, all of my assets, and I'm doing it while I'm alive. I'm happy to do it. I'm so happy to do it. But how I wish I had the really big resources. What a beautiful world this would be if we could give the Hilltop Youth a victory in Judea and Samaria and prevent the Arabs from fulfilling their dream of creating a so-called Palestinian state, because they know that would be suicide for Israel, God forbid. If we could win that victory, this would really be a better world, a much better world. Okay, let's go to our questions now from our great JTFers. I hope I can get to it now. If I remember where I put it. Oh, here we go. There we go. Sorry about that. Sorry for the delay. And we start out with a question from the great Hirvatsky Noachide, who writes, and I quote, "Gentiles are obligated to give charity." Wait a minute. Let me see something here. I'm sorry. Let me just refresh the page here. Make sure. Here we go. Okay. From Hirvatsky Noachide. 1. Gentiles are obligated to give charity, and whether as an individual or a community, they're obligated to be concerned about help for the poor and needy, to help them appropriately in any way possible. Is taxing low incomes despotic? Unquote. I think it depends. I think that obviously you can't go to people who are really suffering and really poor and then demand of them that they give the little if they're having a hard time surviving, taking the money from them, I think probably is despotic. But if they can afford it, even if they're relatively poor, if they can afford to give something, it's for their own good that you're doing it. It's for their own good. That's why we have the chatzi shekel. The chatzi shekel means the half shekel that is that people gave for the building of the tabernacle in the Sinai Desert, and the people gave for the Holy Temple, for Beit HaMikdash. And that included everyone in Israel. Every Jew in Israel was obligated to do it. Now, the Gentiles, of course, are not part of that particular commandment. But the example there is set of poor people giving as well. And this is something that Hashem rewards them for. Of course, whatever they give is going to be a modest amount, a very modest amount. But whatever they give, it shows that they also, even despite their poverty and despite their predicament, they also are a part of trying to make this a better world. And that's certainly something very noble. Of course, again, if they're literally on the brink of starvation or in very bad shape and really can't afford it, then obviously they should not be taxed. And they should and they should not be expected to give to charities until their situation improves. And now Hidovatsky writes, and I quote, "To please publicize my deepest thanks to Rabbi Dr. Michael Shulman, my teacher and editor of the fourth edition of the Divine Code, for sending me a free copy of the book. The Divine Code by Rabbi Moshe Weiner is the main and best book on details of Noahide observance. It is available at the Ask Noach website." Okay, that sounds good. And Hirvatsky, if they've helped you attain some of the knowledge that you've attained and that you've shown us that you have on the website, then that's certainly something very positive. Thank you very much, Hirvatsky. And now we go to Roi. Our good friend Roi, and Roi is certainly a very good friend of ours, and Roi writes on our forum the following question. Hi Chaim, comment on the following, and then there's a list of eight people here. Okay, Yoni Netanyahu was Bibi Netanyahu's older brother, and he was in the military, he was in the Israeli military, and he was killed. He was the only casualty in the rescue at Entebbe. And Entebbe, the Muslim Nazi terrorists, together with German and European terrorists, took hostages on a French airline flight. And they released all the non-Jewish hostages and just held the Jewish hostages, because they're Nazis. And the Arabs are Nazis, and so are the Europeans who support them. And so it was an incredible, miraculous rescue effort. The Israelis went in and rescued all of the Israeli hostages, over 100 hostages, killed all of the Arab and European terrorists, and also killed several dozen Ugandan. Jungle creatures who were there to help the terrorists, because they landed in Uganda and they had the support of Ugandan Nazi dictator Idi Amin. So that was an incredible raid, and Yoni Netanyahu was the leader of the raid, and he was killed in the raid. He was the only military casualty in that raid. So he gave his life in a noble endeavor, and we certainly respect him for that. And now, Avraham Scheinman. Roi, I'm a little embarrassed, but I don't know who Avraham Scheinman is. I don't know. I hope I'm not displaying my ignorance about someone important, but I don't know who Avraham Scheinman is. I just can't tell you, because I'm not familiar with him, or not familiar enough to say to comment on him. And Yehuda Glick. Was a member of the Israeli Knesset, and he's also someone who's active in the Har HaBayit movement, which is the movement to allow Jews to pray again and go up to Har HaBayit. Har HaBayit is the Temple Mount where Beit HaMikdash, where the Holy Temple was, which is currently occupied by the Arab Waqf. The Israeli, anti-Semitic Israeli governments have handed over control of the holiest place in the world, where our Holy Temple was, to Muslim Nazis who want to exterminate us and who hate us and who from there have preached, for decades have preached genocide against the Jewish people and have supported terrorism and support the destruction of Israel. And they're allowed to do this. They're allowed to wave their Hezbollah and Hamas and Fatah flags that they hang over where the Holy Temple was. I mean, just absolutely abominable what an anti-Semitic government and anti-Semitic establishment we have in Israel. And Yehuda Glick, he does try to fight for the rights of Jews to go up to the Temple Mount, but his positions on the issues are terrible. He supports them. He also supports allowing the Muslim Nazis to be there. He praises the Muslim Nazis and has had prayer meetings with the Muslim Nazis, and meets with all types of interreligious meetings, especially with Muslims. He's terrible, terrible. And you know, he was shot and wounded by Arab terrorists who were upset with the fact that he goes up to the Temple Mount. So despite the fact that he kisses their behind, they still shot him and almost killed him, and he still didn't learn. So I don't think he's a good leader. I think he's bad news. I think that the message he gives of that we have to, that the Arabs are wonderful and we have to be nice to the Arab Muslims, and just, they're not all terrorists. Of course they're not all terrorists. Some of them are cowards. Some of them don't have the guts to be terrorists, but almost all of them support the terrorists. That's a fact, and that's something Yehuda Glick would never have the guts to say. So I think he's bad. Mark Cuban. Mark Cuban is the billionaire from Texas. I just think he's he has several billion dollars. He has businesses, but he does nothing. I don't think he does anything good for the world. I think he's just like all the other billionaires of our generation, who either do nothing good or actually do bad for the world, one or the other. Tommy Robinson. Tommy Robinson is, he's a Nazi. Even though he denies being a Nazi, he is a Nazi. He formed the English Defense League, which he copied the name from the Jewish Defense League, the great name that Moreno Verabenu Harab Mir Kahana Zachar Tzadik V'Kadosh Livracha Hashem Yikom Damo gave to the JDL. A lot of people like to copy that name, the English Defense League, the Christian Defense League. There, all these, especially anti-Semites, they love copying the names that the names of things that Rabbi Kahana created. But he created the so-called English Defense League, and he has joined. He, by the way, has been a member of Nazi groups and Nazi political parties in the United Kingdom. And he was put on trial. He defended open Nazis on trial in the UK. There was a Nazi who was on trial for putting up a video where among the other things on the video were slogans like "Gas the Jews" and "Zeke Heil." And he was put on trial for that in Britain. And who went to his trial to defend him? Tommy Robinson. So he's a Nazi. And Marine Le Pen. Marine Le Pen is also a Nazi. She was the Nazi National Front leader. She's tried to moderate her party's image, but she's completely insincere. She's anti-Israel, for instance. I mean, she's completely insincere. Her father was a Nazi and a Holocaust denier, a father who was the head of the party for many years. She took over, and she's tried to present the party in a more moderate image, but it's all fake. And by the way, she's a socialist. She's, national socialism. Nazism is national socialism, and fascists are basically socialists, too. They want government control, and government control is socialism. And she's a socialist. She advocates greater government intervention in the economy and all types of government aid programs. But that, putting that aside, you know, the fact that she's associated with, she has a party filled with Nazi, defenders of Nazism and defenders of what France did during the Holocaust, and Holocaust deniers that are in her party and that she's associated with over the years. So she's a despicable individual, even though she's had a relationship with someone of Jewish extraction, a self-hating Jew. And, you know, there's no shortage of self-hating Jews. But that doesn't, as we know, self-hating Jews are more than happy to associate with the worst anti-Semites. And then we have Mayor Weinstein is the next person on the list that Roe wants me to comment on. Mayor Weinstein was the head of the Canadian JDL. I was not impressed with what he was aligned with Irv Rubin, who was a terrible person. I don't think Mayor Weinstein is a terrible person like Irv Rubin. Irv Rubin was an evil person, just evil. Mayor Weinstein, I don't think is evil, but I think the fact that he associated with Irv Rubin and his activities in Canada just I'm not impressed. I was not impressed with what he did there. I'm sorry, I'm not. I think he's no longer involved with JDL. If I'm not mistaken, I don't think there's much of it. I don't really think there is a JDL there anymore. But he was involved with it and in various activities, demonstrations involving Nazis and and Holocaust deniers. But you know, I didn't think his activities were the type of activities that that a true Kahanist would be involved with. But again, I distinguish him from Irv Rubin, even though he supported Irv Rubin. Now, the next person on the list is Irv Rubin. Irv Rubin created a so-called JDL chapter in Los Angeles and claimed to be the national chairman of the JDL, which he never was. Irv Rubin was pure evil. And I say in the past tense because Irv Rubin committed suicide. He hasn't been around for years now. He committed suicide while he was in prison. But he was an evil person. He went on the Merv Griffin show. In the 1980s, Merv Griffin had a program on primetime television with tens of millions of viewers. Irv Rubin was invited as a guest on the program. And on the program, Irv Rubin said that Jonathan Pollard, the Jewish hero, who spent 30 years in prison because he gave Israel information that Israel was entitled to receive anyway against Arab terrorists, and information that was essential to Israel's survival. Jonathan Pollard, the Jewish hero. Irv Rubin said that Jonathan Pollard, because he was convicted of supposedly spying for Israel, which, you know, again, everything Pollard handed over to Israel, Israel was entitled to receive under existing agreements with the United States, and actually benefited the United States as well as Israel. Jonathan Pollard is a hero to Israel and a hero to the United States. But unless you support Arab terrorism. If you support it was bad for Arab terrorists and Arab enemy and Islamic enemies of America and Israel that he gave over the information. If you like the Muslim enemies of America and Israel, then you should be against Pollard, like Irv Rubin was, and like all of these other self-hating Jews are, and as well as other Jewish traitors like Edwina Koch and other animals who refused to support Jonathan Pollard. But Irv Rubin went on the Merv Griffin show and said that Jonathan Pollard should get the death penalty. He should get the death penalty, Irv Rubin said. Well, in the end, Irv Rubin got the death penalty. You know, God hands out justice to people who are evil. Irv Rubin also condemned Rabbi Kahana. Interesting that he had a so-called JDL chapter, but he wanted to turn JDL into sort of like another ADL. He was against Rabbi Kahana's activities in Israel. His wife, for instance, after he committed suicide, his wife supported the expulsion from Gush Katif, supported Arik Sharon's criminal expulsion of Jews in Gush Katif. Just evil. Just the whole family evil. Irv Rubin also condemned me and the JDL when we were acting on behalf of Soviet Jewry. He called us terrorists and condemned us repeatedly. He called us terrorists, and in the end, he was arrested for wanting to bomb the office. He wanted to bomb a mosque and wanted to bomb the office of an Arab congressman, which are stupid things to do. What would that accomplish, bombing a mosque and bombing the office of an Arab congressman in the United States? I did bomb things. I bombed Soviet diplomatic targets to free Soviet Jews and to make it an issue that the whole world heard about because it was being ignored. Make it an issue that nobody could ignore so that they were forced to free our brothers and sisters from the Soviet Union. Yes, I did that. But when we did it, we accomplished something. We accomplished something historic for the Jewish people. And Irv Rubin condemned me and called me a terrorist and said this is completely unacceptable and called it terrorism. So he then went out and spoke to a guy who was wired by the FBI and told him, yeah, let's go. And I was planning with him to bomb the office of a congressman and to bomb a mosque. And in the end, he got a prison. He was going to get a stiff prison sentence, and he didn't want to face the prison sentence, so he killed himself. He killed himself in prison in California. That's Irv Rubin. Thank you very much, Roy. And now we go to our good friend Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, one, did McCain pick Sarah Palin as his running mate solely because she's a woman? I don't think so. I think I think it was a consideration. I think he did want a female running mate to add excitement to his ticket because he wasn't a very exciting person, to say the least. But I also think that he added her because he had trouble with conservatives in the Republican Party because they knew that he wasn't a real conservative or a real Republican. They knew he was a fraud, and a lot of people had a hard time supporting McCain. And this was in 2008. McCain was the Republican nominee for president in 2008 and ran against Barack Hussein Osama. So McCain picked Sarah Palin because she had the reputation of being a real conservative evangelical Christian. She was governor of Alaska, even though she was a terrible governor of Alaska, who ended up resigning in the middle of her term for no reason. She just got tired of it. She didn't feel like it anymore. She just resigned as governor of Alaska in the end for no reason. Just a completely erratic, scatterbrained imbecile, Sarah Palin, completely unqualified for any office. But anyway, he picked her because she had this conservative evangelical Christian reputation that she didn't deserve. She's not a real conservative. And I think that was one of the considerations, not just because she was a woman. And now Binyamin writes, and I quote, discuss the following Soviet leaders. They're listed in chronological order. Georgi, I don't know how to pronounce it. Georgi Maximilanovich Malenkov. And Binyamin writes, you just mentioned he was Stalin's successor for a short time. Can you give more details about any evil things he did? Because I discussed him last week. He succeeded Stalin when Stalin died in 1953. Baruch Hashem, just that Stalin died. But anyway, he succeeded him for a brief time. And the evil things, I mean, he continued the Soviet policies of, first of all, trying to destroy Israel. The Soviet Union was arming Egypt and Gamal Abdel Nasser and Egypt because they wanted to destroy Israel. I don't remember the exact year that Nasser... No, I'm pretty sure... Yeah, I think he was the Soviet dictator. Malenkov, Nasser was already in power, I think. I think, when he was a Soviet dictator, if I'm not mistaken. But Egypt was openly saying they're going to kill all the Jews, they're going to murder all the Jews and push Israel into the sea. And the Soviets were happily arming and helping Egypt to do what they wanted to do to Israel. The same thing with Syria. He wanted genocide against the Jewish people. And Nikita Khrushchev. Nikita Khrushchev succeeded him in office, and Nikita Khrushchev was in office until 1964. I think he was in office for 9 years or something like that. Until 1964, he was in office. I was 8 years old, but I don't remember. But I know that he was in office because of having read about these things in the past. And Khrushchev, he was also a Soviet dictator who tried to destroy Israel, did everything he could to help the Arabs who were openly saying they wanted to exterminate the Jews in the Middle East. And he did everything. He gave them billions of dollars in armaments and aid, did everything he could to help them. So obviously he was a monster as well. And of course, by the way, all of these guys on your list, all of them We're holding Soviet Jews hostage. We're holding our brothers and sisters hostage behind the Iron Curtain, wouldn't let them go to Israel, and we're forcibly assimilating them. It was illegal to speak Hebrew in the Soviet Union. It was illegal to get to circumcise your child in the Soviet Union. It was illegal to do anything Jewish. People went to Siberia for in any way following what Judaism commands Jews to do. So all of these leaders were all responsible for forcing this on the Jewish people. And after Khrushchev, next one on the list is Leonid Brezhnev, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro, another beast. He became the dictator in 64. And Brezhnev, he of course continued the policies of trying to destroy Israel. He was the Soviet dictator during the 1967 Six-Day War when they tried to destroy Israel. He was also the Soviet dictator during the 1973 Yom Kippur War and sent billions of dollars in Soviet weaponry to the Arab countries, and even sent Soviet advisors and Soviet soldiers there to try to help them, to help Syria and Egypt and the other Arab countries in their quest to destroy Israel. A monster. And also, of course, sending Jews within the Soviet Union to Siberia and forcing Jews to assimilate and not observe Judaism and trying to destroy the Jewish people within the Soviet Union. That's Brezhnev. And then he was succeeded by Yuri Andropov. Yuri Andropov was Jewish. His mother was Jewish. And he did everything he could to hide that. And he was, of anyone on the list here, he was the most hostile toward the Jewish people. He bent over backwards, sideways, every other way to prove that he's the worst anti-Semite, to prove that he's not loyal to the Jewish people because of his Jewish background. And he's another example of what happens when Jews get into powerful positions outside of Israel. They always screw their own people, which is why we never support the Jewish politicians or Jewish leaders running for office. That's Andropov, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro. And he wasn't in power long because he died while in office. And then his successor was Konstantin Chernenko, who also was not in office for a long time. I think Chernenko was in office only for about a year, maybe less, maybe more, maybe something like that, about a year in the 19... We're talking about the 1980s now. Brezhnev was succeeded by Andropov and then Chernenko in the 1980s while I was running the JDL and leading the campaign to free Soviet Jews. These were the dictators we were confronting. So he was a dictator for about a year, again tried to do everything he could to destroy the Jews in the Soviet Union spiritually, and at the same time did everything he could to undermine Israel's quest for survival. And the next one is, the final one on the list is Mikhail Gorbachev, that all the imbecilic, self-hating Jews and all the other imbeciles in the West say, oh, he was wonderful, he was a reformer, he had no choice, the Soviet Union was collapsing, he was a KGB monster, but he had no choice. And by the way, he said at the time, I'm doing this because I have no choice. I remember Yeshiva University gave Gorbachev an award for freeing the Soviet Jews. This is like giving Pharaoh an award for freeing the Jews in Egypt. Just so evil and sick and disgusting. These self-hating Jews, including the Orthodox Jews who are self-hating. You know, these cowards, they always have to suck up to all of their enemies. And Yeshiva University, what a prime example of that. Thank you very much, Binyamin. And now we go to Ram Sheva Sheva Efes, who writes in Hebrew. Thankfully, it's not very long, so I can translate it pretty quickly. Ram writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim Hatzadik Mashlomcha Haim Shamata Al Haichud Bein Ra'am Levein Eli Avidar Harasha Zemar'e מי הבן אדם באמת שהוא תומך טרור, מה דעתך על שיונתן פולארד סרב להצטרף לעוצמה יהודית, שהקדוש ברוך הוא יברך אותך באהבת ישראל, רם מאיר אברהם. Okay, Ram mentions that the self-hating Jew is joined together His name is Eli Avidar. He joined together with Ram, which is an Arab terrorist party, which is allowed to run, by the way, in the Israeli Knesset elections. They're allowed to run, but Rabbi Kahana was not allowed to run. I'm not allowed to even set foot in Israel. This shows that, again, the leaders of Israel are just Jewish anti-Semites. But all of this is permitted, and you have Jews joining the Arab terrorist parties. That's what the Ram is writing about. Kamuvan Ram, she's a Mar'esh, המדיניות של של שליטי ישראל היא מדיניות אנטישמית. מורנו ורבנו הרב כהנא זצ"ל נפסל ונרצח. אבל כל מפלגה של מחבלים ערבים מותר להם לרוץ, מותר להם בכנסת לפעול כדי להשמיד אותנו. ויש כמובן יהודונים כמו היצור הזה שרוצה לתמוך במפלגות הערביות. And now, oh, and also he asked about Jonathan Pollard. He says Jonathan Pollard refused to join Otzma Yehudit. Okay, yeah, I know. I don't know how much Jonathan Pollard really knows about Israeli politics. I'm not sure. But he didn't want to join Itamar Ben-Gvir's party. But I'm not sure if it's because... I don't know what the reason is. I guess he just didn't like Itamar Ben-Gvir. Ram, אני לא יודע למה פולארד לא רצה להצטרף לעוצמה יהודית, אבל כמו שאנחנו יודעים עכשיו, הוא הודיע שהוא תומך בילד שקד, ואחר כך הוא חזר בו, אבל בכל אופן אני חושב שזה מראה שהוא לא יודע הרבה על פוליטיקה בישראל. אני מודה לך רם. I thank you רם. And now we go to Truth Spreader, who put up videos for us on YouTube and is really is a good friend of ours. Unfortunately they took it down because YouTube is a fascist site and an anti-Semitic site that censors the truth. Anyway, Truth Spreader asked me the following question. Thoughts on these celebrities? Okay. I see the celebrities, and Truth Spreader, I don't really know anything about these people. I know very little, maybe just having seen headline here or there. Okay, number one is Billie Eilish, I don't even know how you pronounce her name. I don't know anything about her. I assume if she has music now that the music is depraved and degenerate because they don't allow any other type of music nowadays. But I don't know very much about her. Number two, Kendrick Lamar. Oh, that's a black rapper. That's garbage. All garbage. Three, Rebecca Black. Rebecca Black is a lesbian. She is an open lesbian who fights for lesbians, and she's also, releases music. So obviously she's an evil influence on society. Four, Bruno Mars. The name sounds very familiar, but I don't really remember. Because I don't keep up with any of this stuff. I don't, The only thing is if I, by accident, happen to see something on YouTube or happen to see some headline somewhere in the news. But other than that, I can't really tell you. I think he might have been involved with drugs, Bruno Mars. Also, he might have been busted for drugs. Iggy Azalea. I think he also might have been involved with drugs, if I'm not mistaken, but I'm not sure. But I know that all five of these people are bad news. That I know. Because if you stand for something good nowadays, you're not allowed to succeed. They'll cut your legs off. That's the society we live in. That's why we have to build alternatives to Hollywood and alternatives to the news media and alternatives to the establishment organizations. We've got to build alternatives because they are only programming evil things and making this a bad world. Thank you, Truth Spreader. And now we go to our friend Joe Gutfeld, who writes on a Kot Shalom Chaim. What is your favorite affirmative action story? Thanks. Joe, I don't have a favorite affirmative action story. I'm not... I'll give you a quick affirmative action story that I remember, and it's not my favorite. I don't really have a favorite. But I'll give you one. I don't know if I ever told this story. I was, you know, a number of times I was a guest on the Bob Grant radio show in New York in the 1980s. And he had me on, and this black woman calls up and starts attacking Jews on the caller. She was attacking Jews. And, you know, Bob Grant hated black people, and so did his audience. So they actually liked me, even though I don't hate blacks because of their skin color. I don't care about the color of their skin. I'm against those that are anti-Semitic and racist and evil. If there's a black person who's not anti-Semitic and racist and evil, I have nothing against them. But unfortunately, most of them are racist and anti-Semitic. But anyway, Bob Grant invited me on the show, and this black woman starts screaming at me, you know, all these anti, that I'm, you know, that we brought the slaves to America, and I mean, I told her, for, you know, she said the Jews were the ones who started the slave trade, which of course the real people who started the slave trade are the Arab Muslims that black people bow down to and love and support them. They want to become Muslims. Even though the Muslims are the ones that started the slave trade, the Muslims, and still Muslims, the Muslim countries and the Arab countries still have slaves to this day. To this day, they have a very active, big slave trade. To this day, black slaves from Africa. But anyway, she wants to blame, she claims the Jews started the slave trade. So I said to her, I said to her, there's no way that Jews would want blacks as slaves. Jews are good businessmen. And Jews want slaves who work. And then she said, and then she started screaming and yelling, and then she said, if you want to know what black people think, you can ax me. You want to ax me, she said? You want to ax me? I said to her, I would love to ax you. But anyway, it didn't end off that great with her. Bob Grant then finally cut her off because she started cursing. She started using foul language. But there's a 7-second delay on the radio, so nobody heard the language, but I heard it through my earphones. As when you're a guest on the show, you hear it in real time, so I heard what she said. But he told me in the studio, he told me, don't worry, nobody heard what she said. Anyway, that was on the Bob Grant Show. Thank you, Joe. And we go now to our good friend Kalman Ben Menachem, who writes, and I quote, Chaim, 60 years ago, whites were on top and Schwarzes were on the bottom. Now it's flipped. What percent of this change is due to the self-hating Jews? Thank you, Kalman Ben Menachem. I can't give you an exact percentage, but it's a substantial percentage, unfortunately. Self-hating Jews played a huge role in the so-called civil rights movement. You know, when they got their civil rights, the Jews lost their civil rights. When the blacks got their civil rights, the Jews lost theirs. Because that's just what happened. The Jews were the first ones that were victimized by affirmative action. And, you know, because Jews succeed in very large numbers, and so they were told that, the Jews are the first ones that were not admitted to colleges and not given jobs and not given promotions, and so that to the blacks, just because of the color of their skin, could be advanced even when they were completely unqualified. And Jews, you know, Jewish rights were trampled upon all over the place because of the so-called civil rights movement. Self-hating Jews played a huge role in all of that. The self-hating Jews were the ones who financed the NAACP and the Urban League and all of these black organizations, and even SNCC, you know, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. The Jews, by the way, some of the leaders of SNCC later on went on to praise Hitler and the Holocaust. And the Jews financed all of this. I mean, this is the same Jews who did nothing to save 6 million Jews during the Holocaust, the same Jews who did nothing for Soviet Jewry, the same Jews who would do nothing to help Israel today, and would do nothing about Jewish assimilation and intermarriage and self-hatred in America. So, tragic situation, but it's a reality. Sometimes our worst enemies are our fellow Jews, sometimes who are just Jewish anti-Semites. And we have to fight against that, and we have to stand up for what's right and defend our fellow Jews against the Jewish anti-Semites. Thank you, Kalman Ben Menachem. And now we go to our friend Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, did you and David Ben Moshe have a falling out, unquote? No, of course not. Not at all. Not at all. I was always very good friends with David Ben Moshe and continue to be very good friends with him. Absolutely not. Thank you, Chicago Jew, and I want to thank everybody for another program of Ask JTF that I very much enjoy doing. Let's support the Hilltop Youth Heroes. That's doing something that you know is good, that you know is right and moral and good. And don't you think God wants us to do what is right and moral and good above all else? If we fight together as a team, we can change Jewish history and make this a better world. For JTF, until next week, this is Chaim Ben Pesach. Shalom.